Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 198 event, which takes place in Curitiba, Brazil. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, our premium plays for UFC Fight Night 87 went 2-0 to profit 4.05 units overall. We won our underdog play on Gunnar Nelson and a parlay of the Kovalkovich over 2.5 rounds total with Leon Edwards. We also won our free bet on Hayza Madadi at plus 165 odds. Back to the present, UFC 198 features a 12 fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a featherweight contest between Renato Moicano, who is 9-0-1, taking on Zubera Tuhugov, who is 18-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Tuhugov minus 140, the comeback on Moicano, even money right now over Five Dimes. Our sponsor sportsbook, fivedimes.eu. Make sure you check those guys out. It is Tuhugov minus 175. Moicano is actually plus 155. So early action is coming in on the Russian Tuhugov and some late action coming back in on Moicano as we speak. So a little bit of balanced action, but definitely more of the bettors out there like in Tuhugov. And I understand it somewhat because, I mean, the guy is definitely a talented fighter. Both these guys are talented fighters. They're young fighters as well. Tuhugov's 25, Moicano's 27. So both these guys will improve, and both these guys have a pretty decent amount of experience and they're well-rounded skill sets. This should be a fireworks type of fight. I mean, they're both talented guys, and I expect a lot from both in the future as well. But getting into this fight, how they match up, I mean, again, Tuhugov is pretty well-rounded. He's got speed and power on the feet. He's got good takedown defense overall. His wrestling offensively is pretty good as well. Top control is decent. And his ground game is good, but that is actually one of his weakest spots, I think, as well. So even though he's not out of his element completely on the ground, Moicano definitely has a huge ground advantage over Tuhugov in this matchup. So he basically, Tuhugov to win this fight has to utilize his takedown defense, his speed, his footwork to basically outpoint Moicano to win this fight. Now Moicano is a very talented prospect in his own right. He's well-rounded as well. He's more of a ground specialist, but on the feet, he's improving all the time, and he's definitely not an easy guy to adapt to because he's got a little bit of reach. He's got that length, and he knows how to use it. He's aggressive. He likes to push forward. He mixes things up well. He throws kicks well. So there's a lot to like about Moicano, even though he's a ground specialist on the feet as well. So anywhere the fight takes place, he's a difficult matchup for most people. His takedown defense overall is solid as well, and his offensive wrestling and control is good, and he does look for submissions. He's a finisher on the ground. So there's a lot of things to like about this fight, period. I think it's going to be a great way to kick off the card. By the way, this card is stacked from top to bottom. This is definitely one of the better cards the UFC has put together, so I'm looking forward to it. But as far as this matchup goes, I'm going to actually lean with the underdog Moicano. I think that, again, his reach, his ability to basically having a slight edge on the ground. Well, not on the ground. He has a bigger edge on the ground, but across the board overall, I think Moicano has a slight edge in this matchup over Tuhugov. So it's hard not to pick him. I know that there is a little bit of concern because both these guys actually are coming off of a long layoff. Obviously, Moicano a little bit more so. He's been out since, 2014, December 2014. He was injured, but that being said, he has time to recover, and I'm sure he's been back in camp training, his butt off and even improved more since we've seen him last time. And then Tuhugov, again, he's basically been out since his decision went over and over, and that was in December 2015. So both these guys have had some time off. I don't expect rust to be a big issue here either way, and it should be a really fun fight. But I do think Moicano is the better fighter of the two, and I think he edges Tuhugov out, even maybe possibly finishes him on the ground. So my pick is going to be Moicano to pull off the upset here.
On the feet, Moicano is going to have the reach. He's got good length. He actually uses it pretty well. If you watched his last fight against Ninamaki, he was lighting Ninamaki up on the feet. He has
smooth striking. He doesn't pack a lot of power, but he throws it in combination well. He has high volume. He does a lot of good little things. And his defense is actually pretty good as well. So if he can mix those up against Tukhugov on the feet, he should be competitive there. Tukhugov on the feet is a lot more wild, reckless. He does have big power with his left hook. He kicks hard. He does a lot of spinning moves. So you just never quite know what to expect from him. But I will say, in his last fight against Felipe Nover, Tukhugov's pace slowed down drastically once Nover started kicking him to the body. Nover was utilizing a lot of movement side to side. It's particularly moving to his left, which kept Tukhugov from doing a lot of his spinning attacks, really kind of neutralized some of his offense. That was a lot more competitive fight than people expected it to be. Against Moicano, if Moicano is able to utilize distance properly, he could really fluster Tukhugov because he's got 4 inches in reach and 4 inches in leg reach. Now, on the ground, Tukhugov is probably the slightly better wrestler, but Moicano is a much more dangerous ground fighter in terms of submissions, sweeps, you name it. I think he can definitely be a threat if this fight does hit the canvas. But he didn't really look to take the fight to the canvas in his last fight. He really wanted to showcase his improving stand-up. So I think this fight is going to be very competitive. And one thing going against Moicano is he has not fought since December of 2014, his UFC debut. He was supposed to fight Mirsad Bektik, had to pull out with an injury, I believe, about a year ago, and has not fought since. So he's just been slowly recovering from the injury, and he's finally ready to go. So if he's not rusty, Moicano is definitely going to be very competitive here. But part of me thinks he might be a little, and Tukhugov is tough to win rounds against because he can be so aggressive, and sometimes judges favor that a little bit more, even if Moicano might be the slightly more technical striker. So I'm going to slightly lean to Tukhugov, but I do think this fight is more competitive than the betting odds indicate. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Sergio Moraes, who is 10-3, taking on UFC newcomer Luan Chagas, who is 14-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Up in Moraes, minus 475, Chagas plus 325. Right now it is Moraes minus 430. The comeback on Chagas is plus 345. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action on this fight. Early on, it was dog action coming in. Now we're starting to see some parlay action come back in on Moraes, and the line's kind of climbing a little bit as well. It is kind of a big line if you're looking at it. I'm sure some people are surprised that Moraes is this big of a favorite. Obviously, we know what you're getting with Moraes. He's a BJJ specialist. I mean, a world-class jiu-jitsu practitioner on the ground. I mean, a lot of people can't hang with this guy. He usually finishes fights. He's so smooth. He's so technical. I mean, that's definitely where he wants to be in most cases. Now, his stand-ups are actually improving a little bit as well. And you got to give him credit for that, because when you see a ground guy that is capable of landing some strikes and being effective on the feet, you got to respect that as well. So he's been putting in the work. He's been getting better. He has a ton of experience, and he's basically a proven vet that is at the point of his career where he can make a run at 170 and give people fits along the way because of his ground game. Now, Chagas, he's almost the total opposite. He does have a little bit of a ground game, no doubt. He's a pretty well-rounded fighter, but he's more of a striking-based fighter. He's more of a type of fighter that's going to go try to knock your head off than really get the fight to the floor and try to submit you, although he does do that often as well. But against Moraes, obviously, he's not going to want to play the ground game here. He's going to want to try to stand up and bang. So he is coming in on short notice. Chagas is. He's in for Usman in this matchup. So it's about a two-week notice for him. Now, looking at film and looking at tape, he hasn't really been tested that much throughout his career as far as, I mean, a guy like Moraes. So there's a lot of question marks with his cardio. He does tend to slow down a little bit. His aggression, he's the type of fighter that tries to knock you out with every punch he throws. So that tends to slow him down a little bit as well. So there's so many question marks along the way that if Chagas doesn't get the knockout over Moraes, I think he's probably going to get submitted. He's probably going to lose. Even if it does somehow hit the scorecards, he's not going to win there either. So this is a difficult fight. He almost has a puncher's chance, and that's basically it in this matchup here. So even though he is talented, he's a karate stylist, Muay Thai experience to go along with it. And he has a little bit of a ground game. There's just too many question marks for him here. And if, again, he doesn't knock Moraes out, he's not going to win this fight. So that's why you're seeing Moraes is such a big favorite. And I am going to pick him to win as well, because, like I said, if Chagas doesn't get him out of there, he's going to lose. So I do expect Moraes to probably submit Chagas along the way. So he's going to be my pick.
Chagas is actually a pretty decent fighter, and he has the skill set to be a type of guy that can pick up some wins inside the octagon. I just think this is not a very good matchup for him. The main problem is Chagas is very dependent on his wrestling and his submissions during fights to pick up victories. On the feet, for the most part, he likes to use his stand-up to set up takedowns by being wildly aggressive on the feet with lunging hooks to close the distance and then look for a double leg. That's not going to work against Sergio Moraes. If he tries to do that, Moraes is going to flip him over and choke him out easily. Moraes is just too world-class with his Brazilian jiu-jitsu for Chagas to hang with him on the ground. It's just not going to happen. Now, on the feet, Chagas actually is the better striker in terms of power, in terms of technique, although his boxing has a long ways to go. Again, he uses that boxing basically to get inside. His kicks are actually pretty solid, and if he's able to just sit back and use his kicks at distance, he could win this fight. He could outpoint Moraes. He could even potentially knock him out. But that's not the type of fighter that he is. It's going to be very difficult for him to completely change his style to go in here and get a UFC win. And I don't think he has the ability to do that yet. He trains at a small gym that has not put any fighters in the UFC yet. He's the first one. He has not fought the best competition on the way, even though he is 14-1. Really, his best opponent was his most recent one. So he really has not been tested that much. And my other issue with Chagas is the way that he is so aggressive, he leaves himself open to really easy takedowns. Now, Sergio Moraes, he does not have very good offensive wrestling. I think there is still something wrong with his knees after repeated injuries there. He is not able to do very good takedowns. He just kind of has old man takedowns where he bends over at the hips. But even with his bad takedowns, he should be able to get Chagas on his back if he wants to. Now, in his last fight, Moraes only attempted like 2 takedowns against Omari Akhmedov, and he was down 2-0. And then he just stepped in and knocked Akhmedov out. So Moraes is definitely, if he keeps standing, he is going to eventually face somebody that's way more technical than him, and they're going to do some serious damage. But I just don't think Chagas is the guy to do it. So I'm going to pick Sergio Moraes. I think at some point Chagas gets off balance and Moraes takes him down easily. And then once he's there, it should be only a matter of time before he finishes it. But if it stays on the feet, Chagas is going to be competitive. But my pick is going to be Sergio Moraes. Now, headlining the preliminary card on Fight Pass, we have Antonio Rogério Nogueira, who is 21-7, taking on Patrick Cummins, who is 8-3, and this is in the light heavyweight division. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Cummins, -165, the comeback on Nogueira, +125, and right now looking over 5 dimes. Cummins is -250, the comeback on Nogueira is +210, so... Yeah, you could tell action has been coming in on Cummins. I mean, Nogueira brothers have been legends of the sport for a long time, but obviously, I mean, at age 39 for Little Nog, he is definitely past his prime and on the decline. But with all that being said, he's the better fighter here. I mean, technically speaking, across the board, Nogueira is the better fighter. Obviously, minus wrestling, because that's what Cummins has to do to win fights these days for the most part against a high level competition like this, because on the feet, although Cummins is improving, Nogueira is still a lot more technical of the boxer. Obviously the submission game goes Nogueira, even though I think Cummins handles himself pretty well on the ground as far as submission defense. I've been pretty impressed overall, but that being said, there's no doubt about it that, I mean, technically speaking, Nogueira is by far the better fighter. And I think he's got a little bit left in the tank here, especially in this matchup against Cummins, that the line's kind of getting out of whack a little bit. I think that people are underestimating Nog maybe a little bit too much. Now, that with all that being said, I do think that Cummins can win this fight. He can outpoint Nogueira. Even if he gets top position, maybe on the ground, he can land a big punch. Nogueira's chin is definitely not the same as it once was. I don't think it's as bad as his brother's right now, but still, Cummins definitely has an advantage there. But talk about chins. How can you trust Cummins' chin either? I don't trust it. Nogueira definitely has enough power and enough technique to knock Cummins out as well if it does stay standing. So in this fight, even though Nogueira is amazing on the ground, if Cummings gets top position, he should be able to kind of steal rounds and be okay, because I don't think Nogueira is going to sub Cummings off his back, especially if he's prepared for it the right way, which I think he will be. So stylistically, this is an interesting matchup. I mean, you have a little bit of youth. Not that Cummings is a young guy in any means, but as far as MMA years, he's definitely got the advantage there in that category against a guy that's basically on the way out, most of us think. So it's pretty obvious, or it should be common sense to pick the guy like Cummings in this spot. I am going to pick him, but at the same time, I'm not as confident as everybody else out there that are laying that juice and betting him up to minus 250. So I think, honestly, it's a dog or pass situation where the line is now as far as betting goes. There is value on Nogueira at plus 210. That being said, I still have to pick Cummings to win this fight, though. I do think that he could probably not get caught by Nogueira along the way, and he'll probably outpoint Nogueira. So that's what I think is going to happen. So I'm going to pick Cummings to win. But I'm not confident here, as I said, and I think that there's a good chance Nogueira could surprise us all and pull off this upset win.
Patrick Cummings has elite wrestling and great ground and pound when he gets on top of you, but he is so vulnerable on the feet. He is still very long ways to go in terms of becoming a type of fighter that can win a stand-up battle against just about any light heavyweight on the roster. And Antonio Rogério Nogueira is still a savvy veteran. He still has that ability to put people out if he connects solidly with that left hand of his. And you saw it even in his last fight. He did lose a decision to Shogun, but Nogueira did have Shogun in a lot of trouble early in that fight. So if he can do that to Shogun, he can definitely do that to Cummins on the feet. So if this fight stays standing for significant periods of time, I do favor Nogueira to pick up the win. But I'm not quite convinced it's going to stay standing. Cummins is a smart fighter. He knows where his biggest strength is. You saw it repeatedly in fights where he will get his opponents on the ground and keep them there. Now, the elite fighters in the division, they're able to get up. They're able to avoid those situations like Glover, like Ovince St. Preux was able to get back to his feet and knock Cummins out. Obviously, Daniel Cormier did the same thing. So the big question is Antonio Rogério Nogueira still elite? Back in the day, he was. But, I mean, his brother's retired. He has been knocked out viciously in fight like the Anthony Johnson fight. So Nogueira definitely is not the same fighter that he used to be. So he does have enough left in the tank to knock out Cummins if this stays standing. I just don't think it's going to stay standing. I know Nogueira's takedown defense used to be really good, but I don't think it's going to be as great this time around. He just doesn't have the reaction time or the speed or the reflexes to stifle Cummins. I think Cummins is going to be able to get on top of him and avoid those trademark half guard sweeps that Nogueira uses so well. And I expect Cummins to either pick up a TKO on the ground or potentially just ride this one out for a decision. So my pick is going to be Patrick Cummins. But again, if it does stay standing, Nogueira can knock him out at any moment as well. So very cautiously picking Patrick Cummins. Now kicking off the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a bantamweight contest between John Lineker, who is 26-7, and Rob Font, who is 12-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I've been Lineker minus 150, the comeback on Font plus 110, and there has been some action coming in on this fight as well. Lineker is minus 190, the comeback on Font is now plus 165. So most people betting on Lineker in this spot here, I'm not really that shocked either, but I think a lot of people are underestimating how talented Font is in this spot as well. And this is a dangerous fight, especially for Lineker. Obviously, I mean, he's okay at bantamweight, and that was a very impressive win that he had over a guy like Rivera. Lineker is the type of guy that bantamweight, he'll win fights in both divisions, no doubt about that. But at the same time, I think he's more suited for the flyweight division. And in this spot here against a guy like Font, Font's a strong fighter as well. He's got more reach than Lineker does. So stylistically, how they match up, I mean, it's not going to be an easy fight for Lineker here against a guy just with the Font's physical size, to be honest with you. And then add on top of that, Font actually has really good skill. He's a talented fighter. So tough matchup. I don't necessarily agree with the early action coming in on Lineker. There is some action coming back in on Fanau because Lineker, I believe, was up over 200 and now is dropping down a little bit more. And I expect this to probably drop a little bit more than it is now as well before fight time. With all that being said, how they match up, I mean, both these guys like to knock people out. So it should be a fun fight. A lot of people are going to be excited about this fight, a fight of the night type of category, candidate. Now, of course, Lineker loves to get in wars. And that's one thing that bothers me though, because if you look, he was effective against Rivera, but man, that defense of Lineker is definitely a concern. I mean, you're laying that kind of juice. He has a tough chin. I mean, he's definitely proven that. The guy's a warrior. He has kind of no quit in him. I mean, originally when he made his UFC debut a long time ago, I think that he's addressed some of those issues. And I was a little bit more concerned with Lineker at that time because he did end up gassing and that crazy war he had. And then, of course, got finished. But after that, Lineker went on a crazy run and he's looked great. He's looked a lot better, although he does tend to slow down as fights go. So that cardio still is an issue, but he's addressed a little bit. His cardio is better than it once was early in his career. And he's got a crazy amount of knockout power. He's got good wrestling. Lineker's a pretty well-rounded fighter, but he goes for the kill. He goes to knock you out. And it's not going to be easy with Fawn because Fawn, again, is going to have the range. He's going to be a little bit taller, a little bit longer. His movement's pretty solid on the feet as well. He's a very accurate, precise striker with a ton of power to go along with it. He's got a pretty good chin. I think he's got good enough takedown defense where he could keep this upright. And in fact, out of the two, I think Font actually is the better wrestler of the two as well. So I don't think either one of these guys is going to want to shoot too much. I mean, it's going to be probably a slugfest, which they both want here in this spot. But I think defensively, Font is the better of the two. And I think as far as pure power goes, of course, Lineker is a monster. Like I said, he can knock out most, but I think Font can hang in there with him as far as pure punching power goes. So this is going to be a fight that could realistically end either way as soon as one of these guys lands clean. But I'm going to lean with Font a little bit more. I think, again, people are underestimating him. I think that that reach is going to help him. I think that Lineker is going to kind of bite off more than he could chew against a guy like Font in this spot. And I think Font's going to probably be the first person to knock Lineker out. I know that's kind of stepping out on a limb a little bit, but Lineker cannot afford to have the defense he had against Rivera. Rivera hits really hard. I understand that. And again, that chin did hold up, but how long can he get away with that kind of defense? I don't think he's going to against Font. So Font, I think, can outpoint Lineker on the scorecards, and I think he can honestly possibly land and knock him out. He's got that kind of knockout power as well. So I'm going to pick Font to pull off the upset win and go against the grain here.
Lineker was absolutely devastating in the flyweight division. I mean, he has so much power, and it did translate when he moved up to bantamweight with his fight against Francisco Rivera. But that being said, he's still going to be at a serious disadvantage physically against the big, strong bantamweights. And one of those type of fighters is Rob Font. Lineker is still a flyweight fighting out of his weight class. Now, he does have the power to knock out anybody in the division. I mean, you've seen it. Guys like John Dodson, who have also moved up to the bantamweight division from flyweight, can still translate that power and put people away. So Font is definitely going to have to keep his chin protected. But the biggest thing Font has going for him here is he has 4 inches in reach. He is 5 inches taller. He has the longer legs. If he's able to utilize distance properly, and if he can find his range in this fight, then I think that he's going to be in a great position to just connect without getting hit back. That being said, John Lineker's power and chin are tremendous. So I wouldn't be shocked to see Lineker wade forward, not caring about the power of Rob Font, who does pack a good punch, and just trying to hit and not even care about getting hit back because he has so much faith in his chin. I mean, Lineker just can go to war with anybody. And if this fight becomes a brawl, it's going to be Lineker's fight to win because technique sometimes goes a little bit out the window in those type of situations. And you saw in the Rivera fight, that turned into just clench your mouthpiece, almost close your eyes, and just start swinging as hard as you can. And Lineker got the better of that. So Font is going to have to do everything he can to keep this fight technical, to keep himself composed. He's going to have to avoid Lineker pressuring him against the fence and closing the distance. It's not going to be easy. So even though Font has those physical advantages, he is definitely going to have to do everything he can to keep Lineker from getting in that phone booth. Because once he does, he has the power and ability to change the outcome of a fight at any moment. But that being said, I do actually think Rob Font is really getting underrated here a little bit. I mean, he has looked tremendous in his two UFC appearances, both picking up a solid TKO or knockout victories. And I know that he hasn't fought anybody as dangerous as John Lineker yet, but Font definitely looks like the type of guy that can be a player in the bantamweight division. I think he is one of the brighter prospects on the rise here. And I don't think that Lineker has the tools to take advantage of perhaps some of Font's weaknesses. I think, you know, if anybody's going to beat Font, it might be a really good wrestler or somebody with an insane ground game that can get it to the floor. And Lineker's not really going to do that. He got the submission in his last fight, but it was after hurting Rivera. So I'm actually favoring Rob Font here. I think he can stay composed, not lose his cool. And I think that he can either pick up a decision, or if Lineker starts to fade down the stretch, Font could potentially finish him with a late TKO. So my pick is going to be Rob Font. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Thiago Santos, who is 12-3, taking on Nate Marquardt, who is 37-15-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Santos -315, the comeback on Marquardt +235 right now over five dimes. It's Santos -360, the comeback on Marquardt is +300, so action definitely coming in more so on Santos. Most of it's parlay action. I'm not really that surprised. Santos, man, he's looked great. I mean, he's really improved all around. I mean, I actually underestimated him, as did many people, I think, thus far in his career. But that win that he recently had over Theodoro was very impressive. And not just that. I mean, the guy's been looking great. Look what he did with that head kick knockout of Blasi. I mean, it was a highlight on SportsCenter, for crying out loud. The guy definitely has skill, and he's better than I thought overall. He's even developing his takedown defense. His ground game's getting better. He's just an improving fighter. He wants to be good. He's getting to the point where he's so dangerous with his length and his power and his versatility on the feet that he's a tough matchup for a lot of guys. So it's not really a fluke. Now, do I trust him 100% yet? Nah, there's still some question marks about him for sure. I mean, I think that chin could be a little bit suspect. I think his submission defense is a little suspect as well. But the point is, here in this matchup against Marquardt, I don't think he's going to have to worry about it that much. I know Marquardt is coming off of a much needed win to save his career, basically, against Dalloway. And he does have that kind of power in him that he can end the fight on the feet. But on the feet, in most cases these days, he gets outpointed. I mean, if this fight was a couple years back, Marquardt would actually be favored over a guy like Santos. But let's face it, Marquardt's 37 years old. In MMA years, he's way beyond that. His chin is definitely suspect. Even though he is the better fighter, more technical fighter in all areas in this spot here, he's still going to struggle with a guy like Santos, because Santos is going to be tough to take down. So he's probably not going to be able to get that submission over Santos. And then on the feet, Santos is the better striker at this point. He's going to have to deal with that length of Santos and with the power against that chin. It's just not a good formula. It shouldn't work out that great for Marquardt. And if you think about it, besides that win he just had, like I said, that kind of saved his career right now over Dalloway, that Gastelum performance was pretty bad. Tavares was able to dominate him as well. He just hasn't looked good. So I'm expecting Marquardt to honestly hang it up soon. And the guy's had a heck of a career. He's accomplished a lot. There's nothing more to prove. And I don't want to see the guy keep on getting knocked out to a point that it gets ridiculous. So if he does get knocked out in this spot, which I think he probably will, I honestly, part of me thinks that he should hang him up, and I want to see him kind of retire and maybe still stay involved with the sport. Obviously, he's coaching, doing a lot of things, because he is that kind of guy that, I mean, it's great to see a guy like this, I guess, get the credit he deserves, because he's had a heck of a career. But that being said, this is not a good matchup for him, and Santos is going to probably finish him. So I am going to pick Santos to win this fight.
Yeah, I think this one's pretty straightforward. Unless Marquardt clips Santos with a big right hand, or if Marquardt is able to get this fight to the floor and work over some submissions, I think Thiago Santos is in a really good position to pick up another win. He has looked better and better every time we've seen him. He has lethal head kicks, powerful hands, and he has really started to get comfortable in the middleweight division. Like, he is really starting to become a player. I have him, in my opinion, ranked in the top 15 in the UFC at middleweight, right on the fringe. And Marquardt is the type of guy that would be a really good stamp on his track record. Now, Marquardt is still dangerous, as we saw in his last fight against CB Dalloway. He can still knock people out. He does have that finishing ability. But that being said, He's been in there against some tough guys, and they have really done a number on him over the years. His chin is not even close to what it used to be. His drop to welterweight ended up being a bit of a nightmare other than that one big win over Tyron Woodley. But his losses, Brad Tavares, Kelvin Gastelum, and then the brutal knockouts against Jake Ellenberger, Nate, and Hector Lombard, just not good at all. So I do think that, as Nick mentioned, Marquardt is a bit on his last legs, and while he is still dangerous, I think Thiago Santos is much more dangerous, as we saw. I mean, he ended Elias Theodoro's undefeated streak, and he looked tremendous in that fight, as well as those big first-round knockouts over guys like Andy Enns and Steve Boss and Ronnie Marquez. I mean, the guy definitely has excellent striking ability, and if he is able to get a little space to land something heavy, whether it's to the body or to the head, I think Nate Marquardt's going to be in big, big trouble. So I'm going to side with the younger, more fluid, quicker, more explosive striker fighting in his backyard in Thiago Santos. So my pick is going to be Santos. Now moving on, we have a lightweight contest between Francisco Trinaldo, who is 19-4, and Yancy Medeiros, who is 12-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Trinaldo -175, the comeback on Medeiros +135. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it is actually Trinaldo -225, the comeback of Medeiros is +185. So I did think originally it was a fair spot. I understand that Trinaldo is gaining a lot more respect recently, and he deserves it, man. I'll tell you what, talk about some improvements throughout his career. Trinaldo has put the work in. He's getting his cardio up to par. He's had some really quality wins recently as well. And it's good to see because, man, the guy is ultra talented. I mean, the guy has solid wrestling. He's got tremendous ability on the feet with knockout power to go along with it. He's got a good ground game. I mean, the guy's just a beast overall, and it's good to see him finally, even at age 37, hitting his stride and really pull off some very impressive wins. I mean, if you look at it, he's beaten Pearson, he's beaten Laprise, he beat Park, all guys that have went on impressive runs in the UFC, and those are just his last three wins. So, I mean, that tells you what kind of improvements Trinaldo made. He was supposed to lose those fights, obviously. So Trinaldo has pulled off some upsets recently. Now this time he's coming in as a favorite, obviously, over a guy like Medeiros. Medeiros, on the other hand, to me, he's been a bit of a disappointment, honestly. I was expecting a lot more for him. And the disappointing part about Medeiros more than anything else is it's striking defense. I know he survived and won a competitive split decision over McDessie in his last fight, which says something. I mean, he's definitely improving because McDessie is a sniper, and obviously Medeiros didn't get knocked out there. But still, defensively, Medeiros is a concern. I mean, his body, he's shown weakness there in that area as well. His defense as far as keeping his hands high and not getting clipped on the chin is definitely a concern. So there's, even though Medeiros offensively is tough to deal with because he's got length, he's got power, he's even got a little bit of submission skill to go along with it. I mean, offensively, the guy's definitely talented, ultra dangerous, but defensively is where it's not very impressive, and it's disappointing. So Trinaldo is the more well-developed fighter, I mean, across the board, defensively, offensively, and I think he is the better of the two fighters at this point as well. I think his wrestling is even better, but he's going to struggle taking Medeiros down in this spot. Medeiros has good enough takedown defense where he should be able to maintain it upright, and with that length on the feet and offensive skill that he does have, I mean, Trinaldo has to be careful in this spot, because Medeiros, it wouldn't shock me at all if Medeiros does clip him along the way and possibly put him out. But overall, I still lean towards Trinaldo. I understand the action that's coming in. Now it's getting to the point, though, out there that if you guys think Trinaldo wins and you find value at 225, be careful. I don't think there is any value where it's at now. Maybe originally, obviously opened a little bit too low. You could find value there, but it's not really a great idea to bet, I think, or lay over 2-1 against a guy like Medeiros, especially in this matchup, especially with Trinaldo. He's not getting any younger, even though he's looked great recently as well. So I do think Trinaldo should get the win here. I think he's got several advantages. I wouldn't even be surprised if he goes to the body. I mean, Trinaldo has some thunderous kicks that he can throw powerful to the body and have some effective damage against a guy like Medeiros. I think he is probably going to utilize those along the way because he's no dummy. He's going to realize that that's a weakness of Medeiros. So I wouldn't be surprised if Trinaldo ends up finishing Medeiros. But if not, I think Trinaldo can still outpoint Medeiros along the way. So a slight edge towards Trinaldo in this spot. But I do think it's going to be a good fight, and it might be competitive. And I wouldn't be shocked if Medeiros does pull off the upset win here either, but you got to lean with Trinaldo. Just be careful out there betting this fight.
This is definitely an intriguing matchup, mainly because Medeiros has a long reach in the lightweight division, 75 inches. So he's going to have 5 inches in reach on Trinaldo, and he is the more reckless and aggressive type of striker compared to Trinaldo. But Trinaldo is very technical, composed. You saw that in his win over Ross Pearson. Pearson just could not break through his defense very well, and Trinaldo was just able to outpoint him over the course of 3 rounds. Trinaldo does have fight-ending power, but he really, for the most part, sticks to scoring points and just gradually kind of like a tide, just passing over his opponent and smothering them a little bit with stifling striking on the feet. And you definitely can see him put people away like Chad Laprise. So at any moment, he can end a fight. For the most part, he does just really overwhelm people a little bit and gradually win a decision. Medeiros, as Nick mentioned, his defense is his biggest flaw. He is wide open to the body, and his head, he leaves it very exposed, especially when he does a lot of his spinning or crazy kicking attacks. So that is definitely something we're going to have to keep an eye on here. Medeiros does have a very aggressive ground game as well, but again, he leaves himself exposed there and can be put out on the ground. I don't think it'll be a huge issue here because Trinaldo is a lot more compact. He's tough to get down, and for the most part, he can get top position if he really wants to on the canvas. So I think this fight stays on the feet. Medeiros will be dangerous with his kicking game from distance and if he can establish a good jab. But for the most part, Medeiros doesn't like to sit back and just utilize a reach advantage. He likes to get into the phone booth and make it a little uglier. So I think that's actually where Trinaldo will shine because he can counter-strike effectively. He does have that power, and Medeiros' defense is just not as good. And you're going to see Trinaldo kind of teeing off at times due to some of these openings that he's going to find. So even though Trinaldo is getting a bit older, he is getting better every time we've seen him. He is, in my opinion, a fringe top 15 lightweight in a very stacked lightweight division. So Medeiros, at some point in this fight, I think he gets clipped and hurt. I don't know if he'll be finished, but I do think that'll help Trinaldo along the way of at least winning a decision. So my pick for this fight will be Francisco Trinaldo. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have Damian Maia, who is 22-6, taking on Matt Brown, who is 22-13, and this is in the welterweight division. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Maia -380, the comeback on Brown +260, right now looking over 5 times. It is currently Maia -300, the comeback is +250. So line margin is basically tightened up. There is a 10 cent drop on the dog overall. Parlay action, of course, coming in Maya's way. Some straight action coming in Brown's way as well. This is pretty a clear-cut fight. I mean, you have your grappler versus striker matchup. I mean, it doesn't get any more clear than that. Both these guys are a little bit more well-rounded than that. Obviously, Maia has okay stand-up, but against legit solid strikers, that's not where he really wants to go. He wants to take the fight to the ground, work his submission game. I mean, just look how impressive he was, even against a guy like Gunnar Nelson. But not just that. I mean, throughout his career, he's been really impressive. And the ground game is his specialty. One of the best grapplers ever to compete in MMA. And Brown, of course, is one of the best strikers we've seen in the UFC in a long time because he's got that warrior spirit. Even if he gets outstruck a little bit, I mean, he's just, you can never count him out. I mean, if he's getting outpointed, he's always in the fight. He's got that killer instinct. He's got a ton of knockout power to go along with that heart, and he just puts the pressure on people. So if you can't get him to the ground, in most cases, Brown's going to finish you on the feet. I mean, on the ground, of course, he does have some submission skill as well, but that is definitely his area that he needs to work on because defensively, I mean, he sticks his neck in spots where he shouldn't, even though his sub defense through the years has gotten a lot better. I give him credit. He's been working on it. It's improved, but a guy like Damian Maia, come on. I mean, if you've been subbed, I believe like 9 times throughout your career, obviously a guy like Damian Maia can sub him as well. So that's a whole nother level you can't really prepare for. So Maya's going to have to get this fight to the ground. And if he does, he's going to finish Brown. He's going to submit Brown. I don't think there's a question mark there. So it really is just how long it takes him to do that. And I do think he can get Brown on the ground as well. So I am going to pick Maia to win the grappler versus striker type of matchup. I mean, he realistically should roll in this fight. If he can't, for some reason, get the takedowns or take Brown's back against the cage standing or something like that, he is probably going to get knocked out. He might get finished here as well. So that's Brown's chance to win this fight. But overall, yeah, like I said, I have to side with the grappler. I think Maia continues his role here. And with this win, he should seriously be considered in the mix for a title shot. I know he's close right now, and he's a threat, man. I mean, he's that special of a grappler that he could wear that strap even at age 38. How impressive is that? So I am picking Maia to beat Brown in this matchup here.
If this fight stays standing, it could go as quickly as Maia Marquardt at middleweight did. But I don't think that Maia is going to fall into that trap. Matt Brown is an extremely dangerous striker with vicious Muay Thai, a ton of heart, great durability. But you know what's not durable? His limbs, his neck, any type of situation he gets put in on the ground where those get threatened, we've seen him tap out. Now, I know that his ground game has improved. We haven't seen him threatened on the canvas much at all in any of his recent fights. The only person that was able to do anything was Johnny Hendricks repeatedly taking him down in a decision. But he really hasn't also fought people that are aggressive submission fighters. And that's what Damian Maia is. I mean, we all know how good Gunnar Nelson just looked against Albert Tumenov. And just remember, Damian Maia made Gunnar Nelson look like he was a child playing with an adult on the ground. That's how good Damian Maia is on the canvas. He is ferocious, aggressive, has such tremendous control of his hips and everything, and he is almost effortlessly able to get on his opponent's back and look for that rear naked choke. But he's also just as dangerous with triangles, with arm bars. I mean, you name it, he is the type of guy that can put people out, and he has aggressively done it so far in his UFC career, especially since dropping down to the welterweight division. He is definitely a player right now at 170. Now, Matt Brown was on a tremendous run, and he has been competitive against a lot of great fighters. I mean, his war against Robbie Lawler was awesome. Great five-round battle. But I think in this fight, he's just outmatched because of the stylistic matchup. I mean, we've seen it time and time again. Before Brown went on this run and became a player at 170, he was submitted by Seth Baczynski. He was submitted by Brian Foster. He was submitted by Chris Lytle. So I do think that if Maia can get him to the floor, and he should be able to because he just has these sneaky takedowns where he just closes the distance and drags you to the floor. And just once he gets a hold of you, at some point, he is going to get the leverage to drag you down. And once he does, I don't see Matt Brown escaping his clutches. So unless Matt Brown is able to put Maia out on the feet before he can get him to the floor, I think at some point Maia does submit him. So my pick is going to be Damian Maia. Now, kicking off the pay-per-view main card is a welterweight contest between Warley Alves, who is 11-0, and Brian Barberina, who is 11-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has a public shifted things so far?
I open Alves -350, the comeback on Barberina +250. Right now it is Alves -550, I should say, and the comeback on Barberina is +425. So the line is climbing a little bit for Alves. A lot of people thinking this fight is a setup fight for Alves to get the victory here because Barberina beat their boy, beat the UFC's boy, Sage, and it's hard to deny that, man. It's like they're throwing it to the sharks here against Alves because obviously Alves is an ultra-talented fighter. He's a finisher. I mean, the guy has a lot of potential. Minus, I mean, the issues that he has, obviously, is his conditioning. His cardio lets him down at times. So his cardio is always going to be concerned. And against a guy like Barberina, this is the interesting thing. I mean, that's his strength, is kind of lasting, surviving, and then taking fights into deeper waters and winning and finishing his opponents that way, or making it interesting enough. But early on, there's no doubt Alves is the front runner here. He's a devastating finisher. On the feet, he can knock you out. Obviously, he's got a great guillotine choke on the ground. He's got submission skill. So Alves is a finisher, and he probably does stop Barberina along the way. Or if not, I think Alves could probably at least make it interesting enough or dominate the first two rounds enough that he should, wrap it up in those two rounds and then win on the scorecards as well. So this is Alves's fight to win or lose. I understand why the public's coming in this way, especially considering Barberina has been floating between lightweight and welterweight. He beat Sage at welterweight. Now he's back here fighting against Alves at welterweight as well. But overall, Alves in Brazil, with all the hype, all the ability that he has, he should beat a guy like Barbarina. Now, Barbarina is a warrior, have a ton of respect for him as well, but he's just outclassed in this fight. So Alves can beat him on the feet. Alves can beat him on the ground. It's his fight to win or lose. If his cardio and conditioning is awful, he might lose this fight, but in most cases, it won't be for this matchup. I think that he should be good to go here. So I'm going to pick Alves to win. Now, as far as the betting window goes, man, at 550, almost 600 now, the value is completely gone if there was any, for sure at this spot. So be careful again in this, if this fight is one that you want to bet on. Like I said, I think the value is all gone there. So the those that came in early on and scooped up some of that, good take, I guess, at this point. Just have to see how it all plays out, but I would stay away from it from this point on. So my pick is going to be Alves to beat Barbarina, probably by finish along the way.
Yeah, the best thing Brian Barbarina has going for him is the fact that he's durable, he's tough, he can hang in there against guys that are more technically sound than him, and then he just, if he can weather those storms, then he is very dangerous. I just don't think he's going to be able to weather the storm from Warley Alves. Now, he was able to do it against Sage Northcutt. He actually showcased a lot of toughness in that UFC debut against Joe Ellenberger before picking up a late stoppage. But I do think when he faces more technical guys, he's going to get beat up a little bit. What's surprising to me is that he stayed at welterweight. I thought that that last fight against Sage, where they had both previously been lightweights, that that was just kind of a one-time-off thing. But he's sticking around in the division. And I don't think this is a great idea. I mean, Barbarina is a big fighter for the lightweight division, but he's not that big in the welterweight division. He's actually as tall and as long as he is, he's basically an average size welterweight now. And a guy like Warley Alves, who is just built like a tank, is the same size as Brian Barbarina. I think Alves is going to be able to bully him around, especially early in this fight, on the feet, in the clinch, wherever. And then, of course, if Barbarina tries to get to the floor, Alves has just a beautiful guillotine choke that he has submitted so many people with along the way, especially that last fight where he picked up a very quick first-round guillotine choke submission. So I think Barbarina's in big, big trouble. The only way I see Barbarina winning this fight is if Alves expends a lot of energy in the first two rounds trying to finish Barbarina and is unable to do it, and then gasses. And then maybe Barbarina, if he can get Alves against the cage and just start unloading with knees and elbows, he does have pretty good Muay Thai skills, maybe he could put Alves away late if he gasses. But I don't think Alves is going to do that. If he sees that Barbarina is too tough to finish, I think that he'll slow down the pace a little bit and just ride this out. Alves should be the better fighter on the ground. He should be the better fighter on the feet in terms of a pure boxing technique. And really, unless he completely fades down the stretch, then this is Alves's fight to win. And I think that he does pick up a finish along the way at some point, because hands down, he just is the better overall fighter. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Mauricio Shogun Hua, who is 23-10, taking on Corey Anderson, who is 9-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Anderson, minus 185, Hua plus 145. And right now it's Anderson minus 240. Shogun Hua is plus 200. So more action coming in Anderson's way. Not really that surprised right now. I mean, basically, more than anything else, it seems like it's a fade on Hua. I know that he's, again, on the decline spot past his prime for sure. And Corey Anderson is one of these guys that's kind of on the rise. I mean, at 205, he's definitely going to put himself in a good spot with a win over Shogun here. And he keeps on climbing the ladder and they match him up accordingly. He can win some fights and get himself in title contention eventually. And Anderson obviously is the type of guy that most of the bettors out there like, and most of the fans out there like. He's a wrestler that has a pretty good, obviously, grappling game, getting the fight to the ground, controlling a little bit, landing some ground to pound. He's got some decent stand-up skill as well. His boxing's okay. He knows how to use his length at times as well. He's got a little bit of power to go along with it. I mean, across the board, Anderson's a very solid fighter. Now, his chin is definitely suspect. I mean, Vellante was able to get him out of there late. His cardio at times seems to be suspect. So there's some question marks around Anderson. I think that maybe he's probably getting a little bit too much respect right now over a guy like Shogun Hua, because Shogun is still of difficult out, especially in this matchup, because Shogun's, his wrestling's improved throughout the years, offensively especially. I mean, if you watch this guy, he's taking down some pretty decent fighters these days. I mean, some decent wrestlers. So Shogun offensively is getting the job done in that department. He's been putting in the work and it's showed. Now, of course, he can't still be put on his back though. So Anderson, it wouldn't shock me if Anderson's able to get a couple takedowns along the way here, but he has to hold him down or has to utilize that to win this fight, I think, because on the feet, even though Anderson can have some success, maybe outpointing who I think Shogun is more dangerous of the two fighters on the feet. He still has that knockout power, even though his chin might be a little suspect these days. I think he can still do some damage, and I think Anderson cannot afford to take a lot of risks on the feet with Shogun because he's got that kind of knockout power. So stylistically, I think this is a tough, dangerous matchup for Anderson. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Shogun's able to pull off the upset. The only reason I'm going to side with Anderson in this fight again is because he is on the rise. He is the younger, fresher fighter a little bit here. He should be able to outpoint Hua. And if Hua doesn't get him out of there, he probably loses on the scorecard. So I'm going to lean Anderson. I'm not, again, as confident as everybody else out there that's coming in laying 2-1 or laying over 2-1 against Shogun. I think this is kind of a pass situation. It's a dogger pass situation where it's at now. So I'm not necessarily in agreement with all the action coming in on Anderson, but at the same time, it's hard not to pick him because he should – more times than not come away with the win. So I'm going to pick him to win.
I do think Anderson should take this fight. He is the younger fighter. He's taken significantly less damage over the course of his career. He's fresher. He's more explosive in terms of ability to get inside, grab a takedown. And even though Hua's wrestling and ground game has improved over the years, I do think that he's going to have trouble staying off of his back here. Now, if this fight stays standing, Anderson's playing with fire. You saw that in the fight against John Volante where Volante was able to land some big kicks and then eventually put him out in the third round. So Anderson is definitely – he should not just screw around on the feet like he did in his last fight where he spent a lot of time standing against Tom Lawler, a guy that's way smaller than Hua and is a little bit less dynamic. Hua can crack with his legs. He has great leg kicks. Hua's hands are still lethal. So, if Anderson is toying around on the feet too much or gets overconfident, then I could definitely see Hua connect with something and put him out because Anderson's chin is not amazing, even though he is a beast in 25-8, and working really hard and improving all areas. I don't think he can take a good shot. So, he's going to have to be a little more cautious on the feet than he has been lately. Now, on the ground, Hua does have a dangerous half guard. He goes for heel hooks and stuff, but that really just opens him up to ground and pound. So I think Anderson should be in great position if he can get this fight to the floor and keep it there. He could even potentially finish Hua because obviously Shogun's chin is not even close to what it used to be either. He does not have that same explosiveness he used to have after all those knee injuries and surgeries and problems he's dealt with along the way throughout his mixed martial arts career. So I do think that Corey Anderson can win this fight. I think he probably will win this fight as long as he doesn't get caught at some point on the feet. So my pick is going to be Corey Anderson. He's just going to have to be careful about playing with fire in the stand-up. Now dropping down to a 140-pound catchweight fight, we have the debut of Chris Cyborg, who is 15-1 with one no contest, taking on Leslie Smith, who is 8-6-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Cyborg -1200, the comeback on Smith +600. Right now, it's Cyborg -1700. The comeback on Smith is +1100. Now, there's lines all over the place for this fight. There's actually a line lower than my opener, if I'm not mistaken, out there. Maybe I think I saw earlier today at a spot like Pinnacle or something like that, like -1100 for Cyborg. Then, of course, other sports books out there, reputable sports books such as Bookmaker and DSI, they have a little bit of a different number as well, minus about 1400 or so. So dimes at 1700, there's 1100s out there, there's 1400s out there, there's 1800s out there. It's just all over the place. And like I said, I opened it -1200. So there has been some crazy action coming into this fight. And originally it actually dropped below my opener. Now we're starting to see the action come back on Cyborg. People did parlay her as well. People bet her straight. I mean, most people think that this is an easy fight for Cyborg, as Leslie Smith should be not really much of a challenge, especially considering a lot of people before Rousey had her loss to Holly Holm, a lot of people thought if anybody would dethrone Ronda Rousey, it'd be a girl like Cyborg. I mean, obviously she's the type of striker that's devastating. She has a ton of knockout power. She's got good takedown defense. I mean, in the history of women's MMA, she is definitely the most feared striker in the sport. So she does have that kind of special knockout power, her aggression, her accuracy, everything. I mean, it is true. I mean, she's really delivered in most cases. Now, Smith is a tough girl. I mean, she's definitely talented in her own right. She wanted to take this fight. She's confident. She thinks she could beat Cyborg. If she's able to somehow get this fight to the ground, I do believe that she's going to have a little bit of an advantage and she could possibly win this fight. But Smith, even though she has a grappling background, she doesn't really utilize it. She's more of a striker in her own right as well. And she utilizes that grappling game, or doesn't utilize that grappling game enough. And in this fight, I think she should try to get Cyborg to the ground. But if she's not able to get her to the ground, which she probably won't be, it's going to be a tough night for her. Because even though Smith puts pressure, she comes forward, her striking is decent, she has a little bit of power of her own right, she's not going to want to get in a slugfest against Cyborg. I mean, Smith is hittable on the feet, and she's not going to be able to sustain the punishment she took. And then if you think about it, I mean, Jessica Eye was able to bust open Smith's ear. I wouldn't be surprised if something crazy like that happens again either in this spot because Cyborg hit so hard. So not a good matchup really for Smith, but where the line's getting at, I mean, 1,800, 2,000s out there, that is a little bit too much disrespect. I think Smith is better than that, especially considering the Cyborg has a little bit of pressure on her. I mean, finally coming into the UFC, making her debut, which everybody's been trying to get Cyborg into the UFC for a long time now. So she has that hometown crowd behind her, but there is some pressure here as well. So where it's at now, obviously there's no value, I think, either way here. It is more of a dog or pass situation, but are you really going to put the bet on Smith out there? It's kind of tough to do. So I am going to pick Cyborg to probably finish Smith as she does most opponents here, and it's not a really big shocker. So Cyborg is my pick.
Yeah, I'm not going to waste a lot of time on this one. Cyborg Justino is so dangerous. She has so much power. She has a good chin. She is extremely aggressive. And really the only people that have ever had any success against her were Gina Carano, and she still got put away in the first round, and in Cyborg's kickboxing match, where she ended up losing in lion fights a while back. Leslie Smith is not a professional kickboxer, one of the best in the strikers in the world. I don't expect Leslie Smith to have a lot of success here. She's game. She's tough as nails. She throws a high volume of strikes, but Leslie Smith does not have the power to scare Cyborg. I think Cyborg's just going to walk right through those strikes and then just start pummeling Smith. She has just ferocious power, like just otherworldly power that can really do some insane damage. The only thing that is even a concern for me in this fight is the fact that it's taking place at 140 pounds because Cyborg is so incredibly big and strong, and this is the lowest she has ever cut down to for a fight. So maybe that saps something out of her, but I don't think it's going to be nearly enough because, I mean, Leslie Smith can fight at 125 if she really diets down. She's done it before in Invicta. And Cyborg, I mean, she is going to have to kill herself to get to 140. And as long as she handles the weight cut fine, then I expect Cyborg to just open up a can on Leslie Smith and at some point put this fight out probably in the first round. So my pick is going to be Chris Cyborg. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Jacare Souza, who is 22-4, taking on Vitor Belfort, who is 25-11. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Open Jacare Souza -350, the comeback on Vitor Belfort +250. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it's -300 for Souza. The comeback on Belfort is +250. So dog stayed the same. Line margins just tightened up a little bit here as well. There is two-way action coming in on this fight. Of course there is, because you know what? Obviously the popular pick would be Jacare Souza in this fight. It's a no-brainer. I mean, he's, again, the fighter on the rise. Belfort's been around for a long time. Both these guys have obviously been around the sport for a long time, but Belfort, as far as MMA years, he's, I mean, just think about the history of the sport. He's been around for so long, and he's been performing well throughout, and he's still dangerous on the feet. I mean, and that's what his bread and butter is. He's an effective striker even to this day, even with the new USADA testing, everything that's going on. I mean, Vitor Belfort still comes out and he's performed pretty well. I mean, if you look at his win again over Dan Henderson, I understand Henderson's a decline fighter in his own right, but still, I mean, he has that kind of power, that kind of accuracy to get people out of there. So Jacare has shown in the past a bit of a suspect chin. He's been rocked. I mean, even in the Romero fight, he almost got finished there as well. And then throughout his career, that's kind of hindered him a little bit. It's been somewhat of a suspect chin. Other than that, though, Jacare, man, I mean, he is a tough out. He's probably the most skilled all-around fighter in the middleweight division. I know that's saying a lot because you have guys like Luke Rockhold in there that's phenomenal everywhere the fight takes place. Obviously, the former champ, Chris Weidman, you could say a lot of stuff about that. But I'm saying what he's accomplished. I mean, Jacare, if you look at his grappling background, there's not many that are able to even remotely hang with him on the ground. I mean, he's almost like the Michael Jordan of jiu-jitsu. I mean, that's how good this guy is in that sport. And then he's able to take that jiu-jitsu and actually make it work inside the cage, which a lot of jiu-jitsu practitioners aren't really able to do that. And on top of that, his striking game has gotten to the point where he doesn't really even need to take the fight to the floor to win fights. I mean, he's got enough knockout power. He's got good technique on the feet. I mean, he looks like a striker when he's out there, you know, standing and striking with people. So that's impressive. And then on top of that, his wrestling is really good. A lot of times you look at grapplers, pure grappling-based fighters, and you think, okay, he has the jiu-jitsu advantage, but can he get the fight to the ground? His wrestling's not really there. Well, Jacare, you really can't say that about either. So across the board, Jacare is one of the best technical fighters in the sport, and, I mean, especially in the middleweight division here. So Belfort definitely has his work cut out for him here, but if he could keep the fight upright, he's obviously has a chance because with his knockout power, he can't put Jacare away. I wouldn't be shocked at all if he lands on the feet, if he's able to get enough time to work his stand-up game here. But unfortunately for him, I don't think it's going to happen. I think Jacare can also, by the way, maybe land clean and knock Belfort out. So I wouldn't count that out either if it does maintain upright on the feet, but it's a lot more dangerous for him. I think Jacare needs to get this fight to the ground. He should be able to get this fight to the ground. And once he's on the ground, even though Belfort is a BJJ black belt and he's very skilled on the ground as well, not on that level at all. So I think Souza is capable of submitting Belfort on the ground, maybe even getting a dominant position and just grounding and pounding him out as well. So it's Jacare's fight to win or lose. If he doesn't get caught on the feet, he's going to win this fight. He'll win it on the scorecards if it does go that long. If not, he'll probably finish Belfort. So I do lean Jacare Souza to win this fight.
Yeah, Jacare is definitely the more well-rounded of the two fighters here, and he's the more durable, although he did get rocked in his last fight against Yoel Romero. Even then, he ended up losing that decision. He shouldn't have. He won the last two rounds, in my opinion. Now, Vitor, you're not quite sure what to expect with him. I mean, he is still the same explosive, very dangerous striker. He has lethal kicks, extremely fast hands, good boxing. But Vitor is not very durable on the feet, and he can be susceptible on the ground to superior ground fighters like Jacare, who is one of the most dangerous on the canvas in the UFC. So where Jacare has his biggest advantage in this fight is definitely if he can explode forward and put Vitor on his back. Even though Vitor does have a good ground game, Jacare is just light years better. On the feet, Vitor is the more dynamic striker. He's able to mix things up a little bit better, but Jacare is a bit more durable, and he packs some serious power as well. And his striking is improving. I mean, he, you know, just blistered Derek Brunson back in Strikeforce. You saw him hurt Musasi on the feet, which ended up setting up the finish of the fight on the ground down the line. You saw him destroy Chris Camozzi. You know, you saw him win against Francis Carmont, Okami, just all these guys. He was on a tremendous run before that surprise decision loss, split decision loss to Yoel Romero. So I do think that Souza is the better fighter here between these two. But if he only keeps this fight standing, he is giving Vitor a very good chance to clip him along the way. Because really, that's the only place that Vitor is going to have a good chance, especially if he keeps it at distance and Vitor is able to really work his kicking game. Now, Jacare, if it's just a boxing match in the phone booth, I think Jacare can connect with something solid and drop Vitor. But I mean, again, he's playing with fire a little bit with Vitor being so dangerous and dynamic standing. So if I'm Jacare, I close the distance quickly, maybe press Vitor into the fence, work for takedowns, do something to take him out of his realm. So, but I do think that overall, Jacare is the better pure fighter. And if he does mix up this fight and turn it into a true mixed martial arts fight, then he's going to win. But if he keeps it standing, it's going to be very competitive. But that being said, I am siding with Jacare Souza here. Now moving on to the main event of the evening for the UFC heavyweight title, we have champion Fabricio Werdum, who is 20-5 with one draw, taking on Stipe Miocic, who is 14-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Werdum -225, the comeback on Miocic +175. And there has been some action coming in on this fight, and it's been more on the dog. Miocic is now all the way down to +130, and Werdum is -150. So Verdum's still hanging in there as a slight favorite, but Stipe is definitely getting some respect, which I do think he deserves. Now, again, most of you guys know that have been longtime listeners. I'm friends with Stipe, so I'm a little biased in this spot overall. I do want him to pull through with this win, and I think it is, honestly. I'll be as objective as I can here. It's a fight he can't win. Stylistically, he matches up really well with Werdum. Werdum has been amazing. I mean, he's another one of these guys that at age 38 is actually, I think, better than he's ever been, because he's been able to develop his stand-up game. We were just talking about Jacare, how good he is on the ground. This is another guy you can put in that same category on the ground. Verdum's submission skill is off the charts. So he's had a significant advantage throughout his career on the ground, but he's now obviously able to win fights standing up as well. He doesn't have to take the fight to the ground. So he's improved that end of his game. He's always had a solid chin. I know he's been knocked out, especially in JDS's UFC debut, but that was a different Werdum. That was an out of shape Werdum. I do give him a pass for that fight, because normally Werdum could take the punishment on the feet. He's just a tough out period. I mean, he's a hard guy to get rid of. So I'm impressed with what Verdum's been able to accomplish. I mean, thus far, especially late in his career. I mean, he's had the hunger to become champion, and he deserves it. I mean, that performance against Cain Velasquez was impressive, to say the least. And then before that, I mean, beating a guy like Hunt, even though Hunt had some success early on against him, that's still impressive. And then that, what really turned the corner for most of us with a guy like Werdum, is his win over Travis Brown. I mean, a lot of people thought Brown had a decent advantage at that time leading up to it on the feet. In most cases, Brown does, and Werdum was able to outstrike Brown as well. So you could really see him coming into his own and being an ultra dangerous fighter. So now looking back, it's not surprising he had the success he did against a guy like Cain Velasquez either. And he will have success against a guy like Stipe Miocic as well, because Stipe is a great fighter, but I think it will be competitive on the feet. I think Stipe can outpoint him. He's a little bit faster. Obviously, he's got a little bit of youth over Werdum as well. I think Stipe is a very durable fighter, and what's going to be to his advantage in this spot is obviously he's got the wrestling background as well. So Werdum, if he tries to get Stipe to the ground where he'll have a bigger advantage, he's not going to probably be able to do that. So this fight should stay standing. Obviously, Stipe is not going to probably want to go to the ground with Werdum. If he does, he wants to maintain a top position, obviously not stick his neck in there. Obviously, Werdum was able to get rid of Cain that way. So he's got to be cautious. And of course, we all know Werdum had that impressive triangle choke win over Fedora a little while back as well. Well, a couple years back now, of course. But all that being said, I think this fight does stay on the feet. And on the feet, I think Miocic can outpoint Werdum. I think that this fight, both these guys are tough to finish. So I would expect that, honestly, the total right now is 2.5 rounds. I think it actually probably goes over 2.5 rounds. One thing I do got to point out is, I've been impressed recently with Stipe as well, because he's been finishing his opponents. A lot of people thought Stipe is one of these guys that, I mean, he outpoints his guys, but he doesn't really finish fights. Well, he's been finishing fights as well. So Stipe, he climbed the ladder, got to where he is now for a reason. I mean, the guy deserves to be in this spot, and I think he can pull off the slight upset win. And I think all the dog action coming in early on is probably pretty smart against a guy like Werdum, because just how they match up and what kind of competitive close matchup it will be. Now, I do expect the line to kind of creep back up a little bit as we go. I'd be surprised if we see it maintain this low. I think we might see it actually climb up towards 2-1. And then on fight day, honestly, I think we'll see some sharp action come back in on Stipe, and the line might drop back down. But this line will float up and down a little bit more here. So it's really on who you like and at what time you could catch the best line you can for this type of matchup here. It's a tough one to bet, though, because, I mean, it will be, I think, a coin flip type of fight, and it is a dog or pass situation if that's the case here. So I am going to lean and pick Stipe Miocic to win the fight. Again, I am a little bit biased, but at the same time, I really am taking everything out of the equation. I think it's a good matchup for Stipe, and Stipe can outpoint Werdum to win the strap. So I think that's what's going to go down, and that's what's going to happen. So my pick is Stipe Miocic to become the new UFC heavyweight champion.
I think Stipe will be competitive in this fight, especially if he can keep it standing, because his boxing is that good. My biggest issue is everywhere else, because a lot of the things that Stipe does really well are pressure opponents, look for takedowns, clinch. And even though he doesn't do a lot of damage in the clinch, even though he doesn't do a lot of damage from top position unless he's fighting Mark Hunt, he's able to score points along the way. And he does have power on the feet, as evidenced by the wins over Arlovski, Maldonado, you name it. So Stipe definitely is dangerous. And I think the biggest thing he has going for him in this entire fight is the fact that he has a 3-inch reach advantage with his hands. He is going to, if he's able to keep this in boxing range, he's going to be able to hit Werdum without getting hit back. And that is a huge, huge plus. And he does have the ability to do that. That being said, Werdum is progressed so much with his striking. I mean, Nick mentioned that the Travis Brown was the turning point. I would even go back and say that the Roy Nelson fight was the turning point. I mean, Werdum just obliterated Roy Nelson over the course of 3 rounds, just punished him. And I do think what's going to happen here is Werdum is going to be able to mix it up, because he is not just dangerous with only his hands, which were great in the Cain Velasquez fight, by the way. His legs are extremely dangerous. He's explosive at times. I mean, you saw the flying knee against Mark Hunt, and his kicks are powerful and deadly. And especially at heavyweight, I mean, they're going to do even more damage than normal. Now, obviously, Werdum's biggest background, of course, is his ground game. I mean, he is the best submission fighter, in my opinion, in the history of the heavyweight division. Better than Mir, better than Nogueira, you name it. And he is still limber and extremely dangerous. So that takes away a lot of what Stipe likes to do in terms of looking for takedowns, getting top position. So Stipe is kind of forced to be a pure stand-up fighter in this fight. And Stipe looks for the clinch, I think Werdum can punish him in the clinch, because he is a really good Muay Thai fighter. He mixes in knees and elbows, and I think he can do a lot of damage on the inside as well. So my problem with Stipe is, for him to win this fight, he needs to keep it at boxing range, and that's about it. That's the only place that he probably has a decent advantage here, and push a really high pace and try to wear Werdum down. That's not going to be easy. Werdum showed in his last fight he can go hard, and he actually wore Cain Velasquez down. So it's not going to be easy for Stipe, and that's why I think that he probably won't be able to overcome that. So my pick is going to be Fabricio Werdum. I think at some point along the way, he might catch Stipe, or he could just win a competitive decision. Because I just think that he has a little bit more to his overall game, especially fighting in his backyard in Brazil. So my pick is going to be Fabricio Werdum. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 198. Part 2 of the Premium Oddscast featuring our premium bets will be out this Friday following the weigh-ins. So stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker Premium member. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.